Well, good morning. Afraid the seats aren't quite as comfortable as they are at the Exchange, but we could get in there today. We are quite grateful to our friends at JPM who made these facilities available to us. But I'm glad you were able to join us this morning for our review of our results for the first half of the year. I'm joined here by Chris Surch, our new finance director, and I and the whole board are thrilled with how quickly he's been able to grab the reins of his responsibilities. We will follow our normal practice where I'll conclude some introductory remarks, then Chris will get up and take you through the numbers in detail, and then I'll come back and give you some further thoughts on each of our divisions as we go forward. Although the extraordinary news in rail has obviously dominated the headlines, I'm quite pleased to be able to report that our results are in line with expectations. You can see the reductions in profits and cash as a result of the changes in UK Rail and UK Bus, which we had forecasted, washed through our results. We told you at the end of last year that UK Bus was not going to be able to offset the extraordinary cost increases above normal inflationary increases, which we said we thought would be around 45 to 50 million pounds. And we also said that you could expect to see the reductions in UK Rail as a result of TransPennine Express moving from its core contract to the three-year extension, the terms of which are much less remunerative to us. But in the shadow of that forecast, we were pleased that underlying trading in both those divisions was actually slightly better than we had expected. Similarly, we're encouraged by the news coming out of North America. First students' recovery remains solid, with a very smooth start to the school year, which I'll talk about a bit more later. Transit continues to post strong results, and even Greyhound, in the face of actually much more difficult trading, was able to demonstrate the flexibility of its operating model now, such that it was able to protect the profit line, as you'll see in our results. It's gratifying that the very hard work of the team to get control of these businesses is starting to show itself in the results, particularly in the predictability of the results. The real shame in this report, of course, is that the transition that we forecasted last year that will take the company to a more stable financial profile as a result of our replenishing our rail franchises has been frustrated by the department's decision to suspend its franchising program. When I stood before you last year and charted that transition, we were participating in four ongoing franchise competitions. We took considerable pride in the fact that we were the only company that qualified for all four. As I stand before you today, there are no franchise competitions going forward. So, in light of this completely extraordinary and unexpected news, the board thinks the only prudent course is to hold the dividend, at the interim dividend, at last year's level, and to reserve to itself the judgment of whether to go forward with the 7% increase in the final dividend based on what we learned from the government about rail franchising in the interim. We think this is the only prudent course of action to take at this time, given what we know. Before I pass it on to Chris, though, I did want to do, as a by way of introduction, say a bit more about how we see the movement of this business going forward. Because, you know, over the last 2 years, the team's had to take on some really tough assignments in what is really a business turnaround. And we have divisions moving at very different paces right now. But we do see a consistency across the spectrum going forward. You know, UK Bus is obviously the farthest behind. UK Bus, we had talked about when I first came in, repositioning it to more of a growth story, and of course that plan quickly had to turn into a recovery story as economic conditions deteriorated to an extent. We do, however, believe that we see the way forward in how to bring UK Bus back, and we think the credibility for that claim can be seen or can be gained by looking at what's happened to Greyhound and what's happened to First Student. I hope you'll notice in the numbers that Chris will review with you how Greyhound, in the face of what is really disappointing growth numbers, has been able to turn it into profit increases. And you'll notice in students' numbers, what is a reduction in revenue, they've been able to turn into actually a slight improvement in profit. So I think it shows that we actually see a way to take these companies, get control of them, and port order where before we were facing a very, very tough situation. You know, obviously we wish that the collapse in municipal finance in the United States, which drove First Student into the recovery situation, hadn't happened right on the heels of Greyhound's trading problems. And plainly, we wish we had executed the recovery, the turnaround in UK bus, the repositioning to a growth story in a different environment. But the fact is, we are coming to grips with it and moving it forward. And in contrast, we've got a transit division and rail, which are very mature and stable managements that continually, period after period, deliver solid results. And that might seem like a description of rail that's a bit out of kilter with current headlines. But when you look at the numbers that Chris is going to present, you see a team that continues to drive volume growth and continues to drive operational improvement that we think really is creates the calling card for us to have confidence in our continuing role in rail in the future. And with that, I'll turn it over to Chris and ask him to take you through the results.
Thanks very much, Tim. Good morning. Just before I take you through the highlights of the numbers and try and give you a little bit of color, I've been here now just around 2 months, and I'm quite often asked for my initial impressions and my priorities. So I'll just spend a couple of minutes on that first. It's clearly a very interesting time to join this business, an exciting one as well, not only because of what's happening in the rail industry, but also with just the sheer scale of the change that's happening in the rest of the businesses. And if you look particularly in student and in bus, both big businesses, multi-sited, varied markets, and going through a big period of change. But what certainly I've seen and learned from my previous experiences in business performance change is it's all about keeping both the goals and the processes very, very clear, very simple, and staying focused. And certainly in the first 2 months in those businesses, that's what I've been trying to do. And certainly going forward, that's going to be a key priority for me. I think on rail, we obviously talk a lot about rail, but from my perspective, there's a short-term uncertainty, and clearly that's in the government's hands to resolve that uncertainty. But longer term, we need to resolve that uncertainty very, very quickly. Because when you look back and look at what the whole industry has delivered in terms of benefits since privatization, it is massive. And if we're going to continue that, we need to sort out this uncertainty very, very quickly. I mean, overall, what I've seen is a real sense of change as I go around the businesses and I've been out and about, talked to the management teams and so on. And what is that change? I mean, what is really pleasing to me is there's a real sense that we're moving to a new culture, and a culture that's really more focused on sustainable growth going forward. And that's pleasing, and that's how we're trying to obviously set these businesses. In terms of other priorities, I've talked about the change. On finance specifically, certainly what I've found so far is all the procedures, all the processes are there. There's certainly a lot of information, and in fact, probably too much. Not really surprising when you look at the change that the business has gone through and all the changes, particularly on the function specifically. So I think there's certainly potential there, both internally and when we report externally, to increase the clarity of both our forecasting and our reporting. So yeah, I'm very excited to be here, very excited about the future. So now turning to the individual numbers. As Tim said, and as we said in the pre-trading statement, numbers very much in line with what we expected, which is clearly good news. I can't underestimate the economic background that we're operating against, but despite that, we've continued to invest in the business, and I'll come back to some detailed numbers later. But overall, in capital investment in the period has increased by 37%. Again, I'll come back to financing, but to be absolutely clear, because I know we all read the stuff in the newspapers and so on, but we have plenty of headroom both in terms of liquidity and in terms of our leverage covenants. We continue with the program to dispose of certain bus assets, and we announced a few weeks ago the sale of Wigan on the back of Northumberland Park earlier in the year, and that program continues. Overall, on the financial numbers, $3.25 billion in sales, increase of 2.6% compared with last year. But I think, as most of you know, last year included an extra week. So if you take account of that, the underlying growth is 5.4%. What I've done throughout this presentation is included a number of bridges, which I hope will help you understand the key drivers in the business. And this one is the first, and I hope from this you can see the impact in the bus business and in the rail business that Tim explained earlier.
Just so the numbers are good, Alex. Yeah, that's fine.
What is more important to me, though, and again, as Tim explained on his graphic, is the numbers that you can see in each of the divisions and the stage they're at in their turnaround program. And I think it is important. I'm going to reiterate what Tim said, because it is important. You can see within transit, with his further to the right on the chart, increased sales flowing through into increased profit. Greyhound, where the flexible model is working, despite the sluggish economic environment, is producing increased profit. Student, clearly more to do, but again, quite a significant underlying reduction in sales being offset at the profit line. And I should emphasize these are in sterling at the US level. It's actually a profit improvement. And clearly more to do in the bus business, which is at the left-hand side of the chart, and more to do. I'll come back to this, but overall, again, what was pleasing during the period was the increase in margins in each of the US businesses. Turning now to each of those businesses, first of all, student, like-for-like sales down 3%. And that, in part, is impacted by the end of the pre-recession contracts and the reductions that we've seen in previous years. Most of our contracts are in the 3 to 5 year category, so as those roll off, you see an impact. So going forward, there will be should be less of that headwind at the top level. To me, though, what is clear, and I put another bridge here, is the management actions are working. And you see in this chart, despite the volume downturn, that's been more than offset by changing the model. And the $18.5 million benefit that you see there is all part of our $100 million program of the benefits coming from annual benefits, coming from the change program that we announced last year. And again, we're very confident of achieving that. And that's why you see a 1.1% increase in the constant currency margins during the period, and again why we reaffirm that for the full year we'll hit or beat 8.1% margin for the full year. And for those of you who've covered us for a while, that was the margin in 10-11. So it's extremely important that we hit that. So again, good turnaround. More to do though. In transit, not particularly a lot to say other than the model's working. And you see here underlying growth of 4% on the top line with a slight uptick in the margin. But that also, in this bridge, you can see within the transit business, we're exposed more to employee healthcare costs than we are in the other US businesses, and that increase in profitability is despite those increases. So again, the management initiatives continuing to work in that business. In Greyhound, where we have seen quite sluggish economic environment over the period, and it has been moving around. I have to say, somebody asked me this earlier, what's happened since the year-end? We've seen it slightly more positive, but too early to tell at the moment. But overall growth, despite those sluggish economic conditions of 1.6%, higher in the U.S. at 2%, with Canada just going slightly ahead. First of all, what's happened in Canada, you'll see the reduction in the bridge here. We've been taking out miles in the regulated business, which is lower margin. But as we expected, that's had an impact on the package delivery business because we're obviously not running so many buses across the country now. And we're in the process of revising that business model. So that's the Canadian number. What you see in the US, as I said, strong growth associated with the more flexible, more agile business model that's in place. But also what's pleasing is the benefit coming from lower insurance costs. And that's reflective of our continued focus on safety throughout this business, which again, in my initial impressions, I should have commented, I come from the waste industry. Again, there's a big focus on safety there. And again, I've walked into this business and there's a very, very high degree of safety consciousness, which is important. So overall, that business is performing as we expected. We just need some improved economic conditions. So just before I move on to the other side of the pond, overall US pleasing, as I said, each of the margins up. We are, however, mindful of the impact of, and I think it was a hurricane to start off with, Sandy, that has had an impact in the first few days of the second half. I mean, first and most importantly, we have no reported incidents of any concern for our employees and therefore no injuries, which is pleasing. In terms of numbers, when we're forecasting, we do take account and we do forecast for bad weather days. Clearly, though, Sandy is a bigger event, and it went as far west as Ohio, where they've had power outages. At this stage, though, it is quite difficult to put a specific number on that because, obviously, there's still cleanup processes. But overall, the impact will be different on each of the businesses, and it may end up being relatively small because we don't know what's going to happen during the winter period. So, for example, within student, will term time, et cetera, be expanded? Again, the issue there is, will it be expanded this financial year or next? So the way I would categorize this, if there is an impact, it will be a timing impact and not affect our overall business trajectory. So turning now to the UK, clearly a difficult period in UK bus. And Tim has explained the reasons for the reduction in the numbers. But again, some good positive signs, and this is a business that has slightly outperformed our expectations, only slightly, I emphasize, but it has outperformed. And you can see overall passenger revenue growth at 2.6%, stronger in the north at 2.9%, and a little bit less in the south at 2.2%, which is essentially down to lower concessionary volumes that, again, is consistent with what the rest of the industry has seen. But overall, we remain on track to hit the 8% margin guidance that we gave out previously. UK Rail continued to perform extremely strongly and generally outperforms all normal economic trends. And you can see there the like-for-like increase of just over 8%. Again, Tim has explained the profit movement. And again, if you look at our individual rail businesses, all performing well. I mean, rail passenger numbers across the whole industry are at record highs. And you can see there that our performance is really up there. And Tim will come back to this later. But you can see it is also on the back of good volume growth, which represents about half of the overall growth within this division. I've now talked about each of the individual businesses. A few more words at a corporate level. On exceptional items, I've listed them on the chart. As most people know, the West Coast was canceled post the half year end. The government has said it will reimburse our bid costs, and we are in discussions with them at the moment over the exact number that will be. In First Transit, the legal settlements, that relates to some very old contractual disputes. And again, with all items that we put into exceptional, we pulled them out separately, not to distort the underlying numbers. I mentioned earlier the increase in investment, and you can see where that investment has gone on the chart. And again, the increases have gone in the businesses in transition, so within student and within the bus businesses. And going forward, we will continue to invest in these businesses strongly. It does tend to be fairly lumpy on individual periods, but when we get to the year end, I do expect quite a significant increase year on year on the overall level of investment. Cash. I've included on this chart the cash flow from operations. There's the full cash flow in the back of your books, but this is where the major movements are. You can see also on the right-hand side of the chart, I've given you some guidance to help in terms of your full-year modeling, because there are significant shifts between half one and half two. Even more so in this half. Seasonality you would see in every half, but also there was some specific payments, particularly in rail, that altered the working capital movements. But the key message I'd like you to take away is that there is no change in guidance to the full-year cash numbers. On pensions, an increase in the deficit by 21 million to an overall deficit of 289 million. Both of those are being driven by the exceptionally low gilt rates at the moment. As we previously announced, the UK bus business, the rail business, and to a lesser extent, the Greyhound business will be impacted by the introduction of the new accounting standard, IAS 19, on the 1st of April. And what that does, in very simple terms, is it prevents you from taking account of equity-type returns in your projected investment performance. And what I've set out on the chart is the impact that change will have on the profitability of each of the divisions. Again, as I say, these are numbers we've talked about previously. What I do emphasize is it's a non-cash impact and also has no impact on our overall banking covenant. Talking about banking governance now, coming to financing. Overall, EBITDA, net debt to EBITDA leverage ratio at 2.9 times compared with 2.7 at September last year. The principal reasons for that are the timing of the big payments, the rail ones that I've just talked about. And I would expect overall leverage, as it has done in previous years, to come back in the second half. Our leverage, is, if you go back in history, you will see is naturally higher at the end of the first half, and our banking covenants take that into account. On liquidity, as I mentioned earlier, very significant headroom and certainly sufficient liquidity there to repay our April 2013 bond. And overall, as it says on the chart, our maturity profile remains good at just over 5 years. The board remains committed to investment grade status, which we've held since 2002. And we recognize that our leverage levels are relatively high, and therefore it's committed to reducing leverage over time. And that's when you look at our external ratings, what they reflect. So just before handing back to Tim, overall summary. First of all, we hit the numbers in the first half. Extremely important. Hopefully, I've demonstrated in the bridges that the management actions that we are taking give us confidence that the goals we've set ourselves are achievable over time. Just want to emphasize the half one, half two split. We would expect, as is normal in the operating model of this business, for a significant increase in both profit and cash in the second half. Overall, our results, in my view, reflect where we are on our transformation program. On that note, I'll hand back to Tim.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks.
Just a few more comments. Try not to be repetitive with what Chris has said, to just give some color to what's going on. I think really the overall story is just that if you put rail refranchising over to the side with all of our businesses, it's just about keep your head down, keep working the plan, keep driving the plan, don't get caught up in the noise, and that's the performance you see. For Student, as we said, quite pleased with the start of the new year, a very smooth startup. As you know, those late weeks in August and early September are a real bellwether for this business because they show whether you have operational preparedness issues. This went very, very smoothly. We're also quite happy that our book of business came in exactly where we targeted it. So we have retention rates in excess of 90%. Very pleased that in that we retained our 10 largest accounts. We've enjoyed about 850 new bus routes through share shift and some conversion contracts we've gotten. And maybe most significantly from a symbolic standpoint, if not material to the numbers, is for the first time since I've been here, we've experienced organic growth. We've received 250 buses so far this year within our existing businesses. And, you know, since I've been here, we've only talked about how much organic contraction there's been. So this was a bit of a relief for us for the first time. Now, I don't want to over-egg this. Obviously, there's still a lot of work in front of us in this division, and there's a lot of work in front of us for this year because, as Chris pointed out, the school bus business is entirely weighted to the second half. That's really the year. So we've still got a lot of work to do. But with each passing month, we are getting more and more confident in the First Student Way, what we call our playbook for kind of moving our economies of scale and management capability uniformly across this business. And we really are encouraged by the enthusiasm that the team out there still has going forward and the advances they still see in front of them. The one missing piece really in the profile of our business is in acquisitions. We remain comfortable keeping kind of just a watching brief on the acquisition market. Obviously, acquisitions is the way forward for growth in this business. It's a more prudent way to grow than trying to get everything through share shift where you see a lot of margin compression. I think as we move forward and continue to evolve to healthier results, that will be the missing component that comes back in as this turns more into a growth profile. As Chris said, there's not a whole lot to say about transit, just strong results, 4% growth, so that's back up from the slightly more disappointing levels of last year. I'd say the only thing I would add is that if you take out First Support Services, which is, of course, that piece of business that we run through the proxy board in the U.S., basically defense-related. It includes that onerous Diego Garcia contract we talked so much about last year. If you put that aside, growth in this core business was more like 6%. And while I don't claim we could hold a number like that by the full year, it is an indication of the healthy pipeline of business coming through in this division. In Greyhound, we talked about the fact that they did demonstrate real flexibility in the face of economic headwinds this time in being able to protect their profit line. What really happened is, in the traditional Greyhound offer through the summer, as petrol prices went down, they lost ridership, especially in kind of the 300, 700-mile segment of their business. As you know, there's kind of this inverse relationship between petrol prices and ridership on Greyhound. As gas prices go up, ridership tends to go up on Greyhound. And, you know, there isn't a linear relationship because at some point high energy prices depress travel generally. But this summer, as gas prices went down, definitely more people returned to their cars. Notwithstanding that, however, the Greyhound Express product, the high-quality point-to-point reserve a seat on a bus business we've talked so much about, continued to grow. We expanded services in California and in Texas. We also added an express-type product to our Crucero subsidiary. This is a subsidiary we use that moves people from the Mexican border crossings to cities in the American Southwest, and that's been very well received. We had a revenue growth in our express business more like 6.7%, with ridership obviously more than that. I would say, I think the only other note to bring in on Greyhound is this. In the past, we and our major competitor have talked about how when we've been introducing these new services in the same local markets, we've both grown, because it seems as if the competition raised awareness of this product among people who haven't looked at buses in a long time or have never looked at them. I would say that that is more than a generous description of the most recent period, that we've actually seen a much tougher competition in local markets. We've been faced with some extremely aggressive price competition. But we continue to believe, and we think our results demonstrate, that the inherent advantage of the Greyhound network continues to allow us to face up to that with sustainable balance flows. So we really think we will, in almost all instances, be able to create sustainable growth in this business, even in the face of people buying growth that does depress our margin and our growth rate somewhat. A UK bus, Chris has already talked about the trading and how the geographic spread is a little different than what we've talked to you about in the past. So those are the only things I wanted to add a little more color to was the recovery program. You know, we talked about under the second bullet the three themes that are the key to it, and Chris already mentioned the first theme in the sale of Wigan, and that program is ongoing. Not a lot of sales announced in the first half, as we didn't expect to, but we have more than enough expressions of interest and negotiations underway to confirm that we're sticking with our commitment on that overall program. But it's the second two items I wanted to talk about, driving operating discipline and commercial improvement. I'm aware that as I talk about driving operating discipline, a lot of the messages are quite reminiscent of things I've said in student. But when you're talking about operating discipline, when you're talking about moving best practice around, when you're talking about cost control, particularly in engineering, it is the exact same story. You know, in student, we talked about taking this outside team and bringing them in there to help them put together a recovery story. Here in UK Bus, we took these five teams and sent them to our depots to drive this depot effectiveness transformation program. One thing we've learned through this period is that the sustainability of a lot of that change obviously varies with the talents of the local managers. So one of the things we've done is we've taken the top 200 managers and we've taken them through an education and leadership training program so that they have the skills to sustain this change. The other things we've done is we've been modifying the program, going with what works. So, for example, we had a stunning, stunning transformation in the engineering function in Aberdeen, which has been, you know, kind of a troubled depot at different times. Amazing turnaround, using just the most basic kind of engagement techniques and visualization boards that you see in the best kind of engineering depots. You see it in any rail depot you go into these days. And so we've taken that program and we're moving that across our bus depots. In fact, we took the gentleman who drove this initiative and we promoted him to oversee this implementation across the piece. And so we're trying to take these kinds of programs and move them forward as we try to improve the basic operating discipline. Similarly, we have anecdotes I could review in the commercial development. So for example, we're working quite aggressively out there with the PTEs to change the image of FIRST, to be the company that really can solve the local issues. We're very, very proud. Giles Fernley has really pushed this himself, this path-breaking partnership in South Yorkshire, which we think will completely change the operating environment for the local authority, for us, and will lead to bus growth for everyone. We're hoping that this quality partnership will show the way forward to West Yorkshire and other places and is a way forward for us. We're also redesigning a lot of our networks. We've done them in Aberdeen and Norwich and Southampton and a number of other places. This takes time, so you have to go through these consultations. It upsets a lot of people who don't want to see change. But we're convinced over time these redesigns will concentrate our resources in corridors where the greatest opportunity for growth is. And we're also starting to see more bravery at the local level of using the pricing lever to drive volume. So in Sheffield, for example, we lowered prices of fares on the high-volume routes and were rewarded with about 15% growth in volume. We lowered child fares in Manchester with no loss in revenue. So as these examples continue to spread through the network, we think the whole group gets more confident to try things. It's what you have to do. You have to experiment. Some things aren't going to work. But we do see some real energy. And I appreciate that these are just anecdotes. You can't see them in our numbers yet, other than the assumption that things might have been a little worse if we hadn't gotten moving. But there are enough of them starting to proliferate through the business that we take a real confidence that they will show themselves in our results going forward. And UK Rail, as Chris has already mentioned, really strong volume growth. They've also improved the punctuality so that in each of our divisions, each of our franchises, above 90%. You know, we have the largest portfolio, we have the deepest management, and we think that our delivery of these results on an everyday basis is what creates our real pedigree to assume that we will have a continuing role in rail as we go forward. Of course, we thought the confirmation of that thesis was our winning the Intercity West Coast franchise in August. And we were genuinely shocked and disappointed to receive the news in early October that that competition has been canceled. The explanation of why that happened and why this was the appropriate resolution is still incomplete, and we seek further information and are trying to get further information from the government about that. At the same time, as you know, the government has instituted these two inquiries, and we're active in both of them. I would emphasize that we are perfectly aligned with the other major owning groups and encouraging the government to restart the franchising process as soon as possible, making whatever changes they think are needed to be made, but we do not think the overall model needs to be recast in any way. At the same time, we are engaged with the government, discussions as other affected owning groups are, about what this change in the franchising schedule means for the existing franchises. And we can't say a lot about timing on the inquiries, obviously, or what's going to come of those discussions with the government. But in the meantime, we intend to just continue to drive our existing franchises to continuing improvement so that we just further burnish our rail credentials. So in summary then, we knew that the current results were going to see this reduction in profit and cash, which we forecast and predicted. We believed that we had a transition mapped out, and we were confident in it simply because we know we're good at rail, and we thought it was so highly unlikely, given all these competitions going forward, that we would not have our fair share of the business. The award of the Intercity West Coast was a pleasant early corroboration of that thesis. And further, the underlying trading that we were seeing in all of our businesses gave us further confidence in the way forward. So it was a real blow to us when the government made the decision they did to pull down the award of the Intercity West Coast. But the point I want to make is we have absolutely no interest in being viewed as a victim. The hard work of running this company is about turning around our bus businesses, and that's where our focus is. And we think we know the way forward. We've seen it in Greyhound, we're seeing it in First Student, and we will see it in UK Bus. We're certain that as the rail situation unfolds, that we are going to have a continuing role, provided the government doesn't do something outrageous in terms of the business model. But it's more than appropriate that our board want to understand the change in schedule or whether there's any change in kind in franchising, in order to see what its further judgment is about the prospects of the company going forward on the long term. So it's more than sensible you would want to have that information before you made a final decision about shareholder payout for this year or going forward. We believe we have clarity on how we want to drive these businesses forward, but of course, we have to take account of these completely extraordinary circumstances in the execution of what we intend to do. What hasn't changed and won't change is that we're in a great sector, a sector that's critical to economic growth, and that this company in this sector has this unique, broad, diverse footprint that gives us quite a lot of opportunity for improvement and growth over the long term, and then that's our determination. So with that, I will invite you to ask questions, which Chris and I will do our best to answer.
I don't know whose hand went up first. Hi, good morning. Thanks very much for taking the questions. I have a couple, firstly on student and then just with regards to cash flow. With regards to the student contract, you talked about the revenue reductions. How much of that is attributable to rolling off the less profitable contracts, and how does that contribute to the margin improvement, and what scope do you see for getting rid of those less profitable ones in the future? And then with regards to acquisitions, I guess if you could address any concerns we have on the capital requirements of that business, and it's already a rather large chunk of the earnings, and how far you think you can push that to stay within the capital demands that would be needed within that business. And then with regards to cash flow, if you could just give, again, some clarification on the guidance, and then I guess the moving parts, the main ones being the U.K. bus disposals and the working capital from the rail franchises, if you could split sensitively to that, that would be great. Thank you very much.
Okay. On student, the difference in revenue is that rolling off the businesses. Student, as we've talked about comparing it to UK Bus, student is kind of an, unlike UK Bus, where we're selling off the businesses that we don't see a future in. With student, they kind of naturally roll off as you increase your expectations on margin and just don't take the business that isn't rewarding. The acquisitions, of course, and the capital requirements, whether you bid for new business or you buy a business, you've got to buy the buses. So for us, it's the same capital decision. The only issue is, can you buy the business at attractive numbers, numbers that where you know you could deliver even greater efficiencies to the operation? And that's the way we would judge that going forward. Student is, and UK Bus, you're absolutely right. I mean, those are the two businesses that consume our capital. And that's why I say what I did. The real business and the hard work of this company is about turning those two businesses around. Chris, on cash flow.
Yeah, on cash, the guidance that we've given previously is broadly break even, including the 100 million from the UK bus disposals. So that, as I've said, we remain confident on the 100 million timing, as of when that flips will affect that. That was the first thing. On franchises, none of the franchises will roll off this period, so there's no adjustment needed for that. I think most people following West Coast had a benefit to that break-even position coming in when West Coast was awarded, and that now clearly needs to be taken out of the forecast, which I think most people have done. So the original guidance remains the same. And I think on working capital, yes, there's clearly in the first half a big outflow for the reasons I explained. I would expect that for the full year to be slightly negative. I was in the overall guidance before.
But I mean, obviously, the whole working capital assumptions on rail are going to be affected by discussions with the government. But until we have news, you know, we can't really say anything.
Good morning. Edward Stanford from Oriel. Two questions, please. First of all, on the dividend, just for clarification purposes, when you come to review the dividend for the full year, are you saying that you will look to implement a 7% increase in the final payment if it's appropriate, or for the full year payment to keep the 7% growth for the year on year? Secondly, was a dividend cut at all discussed by the board? And finally, on a separate matter, you said you don't want to be painted as a victim. Are you considering legal redress against the government, or is that not, in your view, appropriate?
On both questions, obviously, I'm not going to describe the discussions with the board and what they consider. The board does the job they're expected to do. Look at everything intelligently. We are talking about retaining complete flexibility on the dividend on a full year. The strategy has not changed. What has changed is it's extraordinary news from the government that's completely changed the calendar, the schedule, and whether or not that forces us to take a completely different approach. And that turns entirely on the estimation of when rail refranchising comes in. And if it were not to, obviously that changes the profile dramatically, and the board would have to take that into consideration.
Was that legal?
Oh, yes, and we are keeping our options open in that regard, but plainly that isn't something I want to give detail on.
Damien Burrough from RBC. First question, on school bus with more outsourcing, could you tell us if the degree of capital intensity of the extra revenues you generate from those one contracts has changed versus what was historically seen with share shift or even with M&A, and how sustainable is that as one moves into maybe a slightly more outsourcing-orientated environment? Second question relates to Greyhound. I'm just interested, you know, in terms of that business, what is the thinking around sort of marketing and selling that to new markets? How do people who don't use that service know it's there, and how do you increase the penetration of the market you don't serve at the moment in terms of people actually getting on the vehicle? And then very finally, Tim, appreciate you're an extremely busy man, but I lost count of the amount of times that the word control was used in your first 5 minutes. With all the businesses that exist in First Group, do you think there's enough capacity within the business to control transit, vehicle services, student, Greyhound, Greyhound Express, UK Regional Bus, London Bus, and the rail process? Or do you think there's room to give and focus on doing maybe less, but doing it better, as you already have started to do?
School bus, first of all, the conversion opportunities, about half of that 850 buses were conversion opportunities. So you can see it's still quite modest. And while the guidance is the same in that we are asked to quote prices for conversions, the local authorities are still very, very slow to pull the trigger. There's no greater capital intensity other than the fact that often what drives them to finally pull the trigger is they have to renew their school buses. And so, you know, you might have to buy buses in order to land one of those contracts new rather than just taking on their fleet. With Greyhound, it's a good point. I mean, we do a lot of different advertising. We use the web, you know, use handouts. Greyhound Express loves to pass out cards to people who are standing in the rain waiting for some other bus company's service to tell them that there's a terminal down the street they could be standing in and receiving even better service. It's actually a serious point. It's part of the long-term plan on Greyhound, that as we changed the profile of the company and got a much higher percentage of the blue buses out there and reformed the delivery in traditional Greyhound, that we have it in our sights to have to do a much more aggressive national campaign. I mean, whether it's administered nationally or regionally is another matter. But I do think that is a big issue out there for the company, and it's one that the Greyhound management continues to work on. As far as the makeup of the group, I think the key to it is to have solid and good management in each of the divisions. And that's something that we think we enjoy. You know, we think it's the way the student management has been able to respond. I mean, if you think about it, here's a business that's spread across nearly 40 states, nine actually when you consider territories, Canadian provinces and territories. And in 1 year, they took what was really a pretty tough situation and got control of it and are administering a turnaround program. You don't do that if you don't have the management capability. Transit's performance speaks for itself, so does UK Rail. You've seen that we've put in new management in UK Bus, and we're confident that they're bringing things forward. They've brought in a lot of new people. And in Greyhound, I mean, they probably have the most solid and long-standing management of any of the groups. And I just think it's about making sure that they are all resourced appropriately and that they all drive in a consistent way to deliver results. And I'm confident that we do have a team that allows us to deliver change across all of our divisions.
Hi, it's Joe Thomas from HSBC. A couple of questions, please. Firstly, following on from Damien's question on the CapEx or the capital intensity of student, there is obviously a large step up in student CapEx in the first half. Can you just give a flavor of what that reflects? Secondly, we heard some pretty poor news from National Express a couple of weeks ago about the discretionary element of his student business still being under pressure as a result of austerity. Can you give any thoughts on what you're seeing there and also how big that discretionary element is within your overall student revenue stream? And then finally, on First Grey Western, there is a provision that you're using up, obviously, this year for the losses on that. If the government does call the one-year extension, which I believe it is in its right to call, can you give a sense of what the potential impact would be next year?
Yeah. Okay, so first of all, on student capital, you're right, there's a step up in the first half, and that's principally driven by increased purchases of actually a number of smaller buses, so we have a whole range of different sizes of buses, and again, it's a program to increase and redevelop those, so that's one of the things that's driving it. We've also, we have a deal with Daimler to purchase those buses, and again, it's part of that program of how we change out some of the older type buses into these new buses. So it's all part of that whole program that is causing the increase in the CapEx.
As far as the what we're seeing in student and comparing it to what some others are seeing, I can't explain the comparison. I can only tell you we're seeing a much healthier situation. As I said, we saw the organic growth for the first time. Charter's actually doing quite nicely for us. You know, maybe these are regional issues, and they surely are. I mean, as you know, local and state tax revenues are back up to where they were before the end of the world, and but that isn't true of every place. So California is still under a lot of stress, for example. So there is going to be regional variation. We're just happier that we've had a much smoother ride than we've had in the past. On First Great Western, no, we can't give that guidance because that's part of the discussions we're having with the government right now, and I don't want to be negotiating against ourselves.
Thanks. Just to clarify, on the discretionary element, is it possible to put a percentage on that as a size of the overall business? Because it is, you know, it has been one of the uncertainties of school bus businesses generally, not just yours. And with respect to the capital investment in student, is that going to be, you know, a persistent process? Where you know, is that reflective of the full year level of CapEx and what goes on beyond that?
Yeah, as I said when I was talking, I would expect the year end to be an increase overall, again, principally driven by student and UK bus, albeit the actual purchases are quite lumpy. But it will be a general trend that we will continue to invest in these businesses where we see the growth and the returns.
As far as the percentage, it's about 10% of the revenues.
Douglas McNeil from Charles Stanley. Can I ask about the Sam Laidlaw review? He winds up that review by saying that he sees some practical and concrete steps, I think is the phrase, to fixing the DfT, which sounds reassuring, but that's after a report that details some really serious organisational failings, mismanagement, misaligned structures and all the rest of it. So it seems to me that the steps to fix it might be practical and concrete, but they'll be pretty difficult and they'll be very, very slow, probably taking many, many months. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I hope not. And I don't know what you can really conclude yet from the Laidlaw review. And to be fair to him, it was interim, and he has more work to do and more people to talk to. I would point out, for example, that the Laidlaw review talks quite a lot about the fact that there was a lack of transparency in setting the SLF. And goes on and on about that fact. Well, that isn't a revelation. That was the design. We all understood that. I mean, that's how the system works. So, you know, we have to sort through what is an investigation, what's something new, what has to be changed, and what is just a different way they want to run things. It is the view of all of the owning groups, and we've talked about this, and we've said this face-to-face to the Secretary of State, that this is not a broken system. If they want to change the way they handicap GDP or other macro mechanisms, or the way they address risk, that doesn't require months and months of study and, you know, people to go off for months to design some new algorithm. You can do this relatively quickly and can do it simply, and they need to do that and then get on with the refranchising program. Because while I have no doubt that as other people get into this and there are more investigations and there'll be more picking at the scab within DfT, the fact is they've got a big piece of work that's got to be undertaken. And if they don't undertake that piece of work, a couple of things are going to happen. Number one, Treasury is going to have to drastically reconfigure the revenues it thinks it's getting out of rail. And two, Network Rail's costs are going to go up. Because the way Network Rail's going to hit any of its CP5 numbers is in partnership with the involved train operating companies. And you're only going to strike those alliancing deals, which we've been working on designing, if you have a certain term. And you're only going to have a certain term after they get through this rail franchising. So there's real pressure on government not to just kind of navel gaze at this forever. We've got a lot of work and we've got to get to it.
Yes, Peter Hyde from Liberum. Could I ask three questions, and perhaps to start off with where you finished? If we look at the Brown review, if you want to call it like that, how confident are you that that will finish, let's say, this side of Christmas? And could you just talk a bit about what points you might want to put to him in terms of, let's say, modifications to the franchising process, if any, going forwards? So that's question number one. Question number two, just coming back to sort of CapEx spend and volume increases, I'd be quite interested, particularly in Greyhound, about coach refurbishment and the new coaches. Does that actually drive volume increases? And if so, could you give us a sort of indication of how much historically volume increases have gone up because of that? And then thirdly and finally, I appreciate that you talk about the April 2013 bond repayment and the fact you've got enough liquidity, but it would eat in quite materially to your headroom. Could you just talk a bit about whether you expect to refinance that bond? Thanks.
Okay, on the Brown review, well, it's obviously not our reviews, and he can speak for himself. He's a top guy, a lot of respect for him. I have had conversations with him, and I can only tell you that he's quite determined to meet the schedule because he is quite sensitive to the issues I just discussed a moment ago, and he knows what is required to make sure that we have a healthy industry. As far as the points, we as an industry, owning groups, are coming together to present our views as a unified group because we think that that is the best way to make sure this doesn't get dragged out and that it's a simple, clear message. So I would prefer to confine the commentary to the delivery through as a group, which we are finalizing right now and will be delivering to Richard in the near term. I would prefer not to get out ahead of them. But you can expect that it's very important to all of us to basically preserve the structure. We think you can do things with term if that people think that's, you know, where the stumbling block is. But we do think that if you are going to change the terms, you've got to make other adjustments to make sure the advantages that we were to get out of longer-term franchises, which are more investment in the things that people need to make the use of the railways more seamless, the ticketing systems, information systems, et cetera, have to be preserved. But as I say, we as a group will come forward with our recommendations in order to make sure we have the maximum impact. As far as the refurbishment program and does it lead to volume increases, absolutely. It's really that refurbishment program that we've used to as the metering device, really, for the delivery of the Greyhound Express, because we want to make sure as we roll out Greyhound Express, it's the new blue buses with the leather seats and the Wi-Fi enabled, and all of that is what's coming off of that refurbishment line in Elkhart, Indiana, and it is what has led to the expansion of that business.
Peter, on refinancing, is the £300 million bond due for refinancing in April? Our current headroom, as I said in the presentation, is north of 700. So clearly it eats into it, but there's still obviously plenty there. In terms of our refinancing program, we do that over time. We obviously look at market conditions, and I think it's fair to say the history of this group is to do that on a prudent basis, and that's certainly my style as well. So we will do that at the appropriate time.
Morning, Joe Spooner from Jefferies. Just on the Wigan bus disposal that you announced last week, I think when you announced the program some time ago, you were going to focus on the underperforming segments of the bus unit. But I think looking back at that, it looks a fairly average to the group kind of margin that you're getting out of that business. Can you just talk about that decision and what it's telling us about the future for the bus disposal program? Has the focus moved on? And then, Chris, maybe a more general question. Obviously, a lot of the focus on this group has been the balance sheet, and a lot of the questions excuse me, that you're getting today are on that. I mean, now that you've been in the position for a short while, what do you think a optimal balance sheet for a business like this ought to look like? I think you made reference a couple of times to leverage being at the upper end of where you may be comfortable.
Let me take the wig in first, and I'll turn it over to Chris. Yes, a very fair comment, since I'm the one who made a big statement about the fact that as we sell these off, there will be a natural snapback to the margin, because we're selling off low-margin businesses, and Wigan isn't a particularly low-margin business. It's true that that is actually not a good read across to the program generally. But Wigan is largely a cash story. Those buses are very, very old. It wasn't going to stay at that margin for long. It is geographically not connected to our major operations up there. And so it was just, of more value to Stagecoach, and we were avoiding what would otherwise be the need to invest in even more buses. As as a lot of these questions point out, there's a real capital issue here. And we've pointed out we need to reinvest in buses. So we have to make sure that we concentrate this investment and just don't, you know, think we can afford buses, brand new buses, and put them everywhere. And Wigan was really driven by that calculation.
Joe, in terms of overall structure, the simple way I look at this is, does the business have sufficient available funds to invest where it needs to invest to grow the business? And certainly at the moment, that's what we have, certainly in terms of, and you've seen the increased investment in terms of liquidity and leverage headroom. So that's my start point as a principle. As I've said, and as everybody knows, the leverage levels are relatively high in this business, and the board has recognized that, which is why over the last 3 years or so, the leverage levels have been brought down. I think it was 3.2 in 2009, down to 2.5 at the start of this year. And again, I think it's important that we continue with that overall trend. I mean, I think board feeling, and I think the group has guided in the past, is in the range of 2 to 2.2. But again, I come back to that point of principle. It really comes back to having the available funds. In terms of what it should be going forwards, again, I come back to looking at what happens on rail in the spring of next year, and as part of that, that's where we start to look at overall capital structure, etc.
Thanks. Gerald Koo from Espirito Santo. Couple of finishing up questions. On UK Bus, you took a $3.3 million charge on disposals. Can you just clarify, does that only relate to the deals already done, i.e. Wigan and Northumberland Park, or is there an allowance there for things that are in the pipeline and about to happen? On the First Transit legal settlements, can you just clarify, is all of that charge going to be going out or has gone out in cash? Was there any offset from a provision? And what other similar risks should we be conscious of? And finally, on the dividend, slightly hypothetically, but what sort of visibility do you think that you would need on rail to follow through on the original 7% growth commitment, or should we view this as a review of the long-term dividend policy in May? Thanks.
You could do the bus now, the next two.
Okay. Yeah, Gerald, on the $3.3 million charge, that doesn't relate to Wigan. What that relates to is the closure costs of two of our depots, North Devon and Dalkeith. I can never remember on Dalkeith. So that's the that's that. And so I think that was the first one.
On the transit legal settlement, there was no provision, so that is cash. Not yet. It hasn't got out yet, but it will be. We didn't have a provision against that. With regard to the dividend, I mean, just because of the timing, we always said the reconsideration of the payout going forward would take place at that time. So now they're also making the call on looking for the year. So yes, at all, I would anticipate there would be an articulation of everything at the same time. That's all that would make sense. As far as what kind of visibility will the board require, it's difficult to say in what form this is going to come. But plainly, you could interpret from what Chris had to say, it's pretty critical to making judgments about the capital structure of the group going forward.
Sorry, just one final question. It's Alex Britton at UBS. Just with regards to the dividend, you're talking about the visibility on rail as being a driving factor behind the decisions. A lot of your competitors talk about the dividend on an ex-rail basis. Could you just sort of take us from one to the other as to why you feel you need or even taking consideration of RAL and why you don't look at it on a purely ex-RAL basis. Thank you very much.
Well, I mean, I think that we will be reassessing our articulation of the dividend policy as we go forward. I think it's what's relevant to RAIL is obviously the cash flows and the anchoring of the balance sheet, so critical. If you look at the absolute number of pounds involved in this decision, it's not great. It's more the symbolism of, you know, we're paying attention, we understand the dividend was based on the long-term prospects of the group, which was really what's going to happen with the bus businesses and the board's expectations that the dividend, you know, will be funded out of those turnarounds over the long term. That's what the payout should turn on. But what gave you the room to stick with your commitment and get there, that is, get through the turnarounds, was the anchoring of the rail business, and that's its relevance. Well, if there aren't further questions, thank you all very much for joining us.
Thank you.